Next.
Talk about destruction. Don't you know you can count me? Eat out, eat out, be all right, be all right, be all right. See, you got a resolution. Well, you know, well, I'd love to see the flag. You ask for a contribution. Well, you know, well, do it what you can. One money, people mind that hate. I'll tell you, brother, have to wait. Constitution, well, you know, they'll want to change your head. And act as an institution, well, you know, better free your mind instead. Go kind, pick your chairman, Mal. Gonna make it anyhow. Be all right, be all right, be all right. Be all right.
Shirley MacLaine has written a lot of books about her previous life. I noticed she, people with previous lives never, they never seem to be slaves or slugs or miners. They're always kings, queens, or presidents. Anyway, I also talk to people from the other side, and I like to talk to John Lennon every once in a while. And we talk about politics and art and revolution. And I got to talk about his song, Revolution, and he told me, you know how he goes in and out with Count Me In, Count Me Out on that on the Beatles album? Well, he told me he has a lot of time up there, and he said he's thought it over, and he's sort of rewritten the song, and he dictated it to me, and this is how it reads now. You say you want an evolution. Well, we know you don't want to change the world. You tell me you're afraid of revolution. Well, we know you don't really want to change the world. But when you say America's number one, we all know that that's only with a gun. I don't think it's gonna be all right. No way, no way, no way.
The water that we swim in, and yes, it's very difficult, but I do wonder, you know, as we enter into uncharted territories with accelerating climate change, that is truly can be truly disempowering. I mean, I'm still living the way I've always lived, relatively trying to be low carbon and all that, and still deal with that subject on this show. And I really admire people who continue to be frontline activists and of various forms of activism, trying to stop fossil fuel infrastructure, trying to stop Jordan Cove, liquefied gas export facility. Now we've got the attempted expansion of oil train facilities here in Portland. We've defeated a number of things. I think we need to keep doing all that. On the other hand, it's vast, and it's really hard to wrap your mind around how much we've messed with the natural systems on the planet. how much humanity has impacted. So I want to talk about that. I want to talk about the idea of progress. You know, I'm not sure how much, you know, sort of talking philosophically, you know, has any real impact on things. I've got this hour once a week, and I try to bring impactful things, insightful things, important issues. I really feel privileged to be able to have a monthly co-host of the caliber of Jacqueline Keeler, who brings a really strong indigenous perspective onto the airwaves, which is really crucial. I've now got this, seem to have a regular thing going with this local group from the Portland Assembly. They're kind of also an informal group of researchers that are looking at the real nitty-gritty of speculative disaster capitalism as it plays out in Portland and beyond. I've been dealing with mental health, so-called mental health issues, or mental illness, or stability of the mental health system, political issues around that on my first Wednesday show. So I don't know. I like to think I have a certain contribution to make. Don't feel I have any great power to change things particularly, but you know, I have a platform I feel like I'm using in a decent way. I don't know, maybe people have some feedback about that, how things could be better. But anyway, so I occasionally want to kind of step back and look at what I consider anyway some of the sort of deeper underlying issues that maybe we don't get a chance to talk about, think about. Maybe I spark some ideas. Maybe people go to some sources to read some more. I don't know. I do what I can. So I want to talk about the idea of progress, you know, because, well, I guess it's because, I don't know, Mike, I probably unfortunately refer to him a few too many times, but I heard Joe Uris talking about, you know, as being a progressive station, which I guess is a word we use. I'm not sure I really consider myself a progressive. I'm not sure I really actually believe in this idea of progress as it is bandied about too much as sort of this idea. You know, I don't know. I had such a deep experience at one point, you know, about 30, 40 years ago with Native struggles in this area, experience even with Native ceremonial life. And I just got a really deep and abiding respect for the way of life that still hangs on, but was so had ability to express itself in such a more full way before us Europeans, speaking for myself anyway, showed up here, not that much more than, you know, 150 years ago. And I think they actually had a pretty good thing. You know, I mean, there's some quibbles one could have about some aspects of their culture, I suppose, if, you know, one wanted to sort of be a anthropologist or a sociologist about it. But I have the feeling that they actually had a pretty good way of life, and it could have continued. It actually had demonstrated itself to be a really good way of life for many thousands of years. And we've really, frankly, we've messed it up. We've totally messed it up. I don't see any other way of looking at it. So I don't know. I certainly don't think I romanticize that way of life. It's impossible for me or anyone to, you know, fully evaluate it. Put ourselves in the position of being sort of a time traveler or a cultural traveler into these things to sort of, you know, see if it really resonates with the way we feel about what a good society is like, because it's so much changed. But again, I think I had enough experience and I've read enough accounts I've made my judgment, and I frankly prefer that those cultures to the extent that I experience and understand them. So anyway, it's kind of like as anthropology developed, you know, through the 20th century, and a lot of people started to do this field work and actually living with tribal indigenous peoples, kinship societies in various parts of the world. And a lot of them began to raise some of those same questions. Like Margaret Mead was one of the early ones who started to use her experience with other peoples to look at her own society and say, hey, wait a second. I mean, I don't know. I'm starting to wonder if maybe these people actually don't have better social relationships, you know, better connections, better child rearing, better education, better intergenerational relationships, better gender relationships. Maybe there's something we need to learn. Of course, that's very threatening, especially to the people who, you know, are on the kind of the top of the pyramid, who benefit the most from the colonial imperialist capitalist process, to use these kind of abstract phrases which really do mean something. Anywho, so I've read a lot of that anthropology, and I've gained a lot. Marshall Solons was someone who really had a really important place in the that thought, in this Man as Hunter series of seminars, I believe, at University of Chicago, I think, in the 1960s, which kind of, you know, looked at so-called primitive man and revised look, you know, because there's been so much slander, you know, ever since the Greeks and probably before, about so-called primitive or uncivilized people, barbarians. There's been so much propaganda against them. It's been very difficult. They haven't really been able to speak for themselves until, you know, well, of course, they've had, sure, they in various, you know, small occasions, you know, in one-on-one, and there's probably been some very eloquent, you know, entreaties made throughout the millennia. But it's only probably been with, you know, the combination of writing and sort of the you know, the people being educated in the conqueror's language and being able to express themselves, and you know, through the even sometimes the treaty process. If you look at some of those negotiations and some of the minutes from that, you see some very eloquent. And of course, now, you know, more recently, we've certainly, you know, we've had France Fanon and many, you know, colonized intellectuals and writers and poets and artists. Certainly Vine Deloria was a seminal figure in the United States, and there's been many since. There's many that I certainly don't know of because I haven't really kept up with it. Anyway, if you get my drift, I as a, you know, as a privileged white male Euro-American, you know, I have that privilege, but I also have my understanding of things, and I feel like I've done the best I can to try to educate myself, put myself in situations that are kind of outside the bubble of that privilege and comfort zone. Anyway, so yeah, I've basically come to question the very foundations of this society that we live in, industrial Euro-American society. So anyway, I'd be interested to hear. I've got some other things I want to talk about. I want to talk about this Dianne Feinstein's interaction with these youth fighting for their very lives and their futures, and being so thoroughly dismissed by Feinstein, who kind of represents the old guard of a party that people still see as sort of a beacon of progress or a bulwark against, you know, the depredations of the dastardly Republicans. If I can find that article, but you know what I really want to do, it looks like we've already got some people, maybe some of whom have already called in before, but what I was going to do before people called in, I was going to invite people who've never called in to this program before. Never, ever. I really, you know, because I go out, you know, I'm out there in at events and stuff and get to talking to people, and people say they listen to my show sometimes. I say, well, have you ever called in? And, you know, there's no reason you have to. Some, you know, people have all sorts of reasons for not calling out. It's certainly not obligatory, but I'm really interested in hearing different points of view, different perspectives, And sometimes those people really have interesting perspectives, and it'd be interesting to hear them, because there's really precious few opportunities for us to engage in public. You know, a lot of events now, it seems like people even want their questions in writing. You know, you may have like 10, 15 minutes at the very end of the event for question and answer. You know, there's just not a lot of time for public discussion. You know, the old salon, I sort of have this romantic idea of the old salon milieu where people would engage in passionate discussion of whatever, leading up to, say, the French Revolution. Anyway, speaking of revolution. So yeah, the people who called in, I'd love to hear from you. But yeah, I really would like to hear people who've never called in before or very rarely. And so I'd like to put you up to the front of the stack, if I could get my board op Heather to maybe to put that out there to people who call in. But we do have Laura first up on the stack. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good morning, Paul. I am a rarely calling in person, if that counts. And
you count.
I'm just so excited this morning because I heard on Democracy Now! That Lake Erie has been accorded a Bill of Rights by the citizens of Toledo, Ohio, which is just so huge and wonderful. And I know progress is a ham-handed word, but I think of it more as coming to our senses. And as someone who, an activist who works on the Willamette River cleanup, this just makes my year, honestly.
Well, could you explain about what that means a little bit?
A Bill of Rights means that the river, or in this case Lake Erie, has the same rights as a person. So you can't abuse it, you can't damage it, you can't harm it. And as far as I understand, it includes its surrounding ecosystems, you know, the upland of the river. I don't really know a lot more than that. I know that the precedent, there's precedents for it in New Zealand and Ecuador and some other places, but not in the U.S. And given the waste sites, the Superfund sites we have in this country, a lot around water, I mean, this is just huge. And I don't know what that will mean for the Willamette, but I think it's definitely a way forward and a coming to our senses rather than progress, which seems more like a linear thing. Uh-huh. I think this is an awakening, and I'm just so excited. You know, at the same time, I'm hearing on Democracy Now! That, you know, Pakistan and India are threatening to nuke one another. It's like that. It's a crazy time, but thanks to you and many other people, I feel like we're waking up, and I just wanted to share that good news.
Okay, and does that come out of the community rights milieu? That,
you know, that's a good question.
Because I know a lot of I know there have been people from that tendency or movement, whatever, who have been working on such things. Or anyway, it may be somebody else might call in with that information. But
yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, no,
All right.
I appreciate that. It is nice to have, sparks of positivity of people, you know, because people are everywhere people are, there are people who are fighting for dignity and rights and health and balance and sanity and other good things. So again, I am inviting people who don't regularly call in. Sean is up next. I believe he probably may be a regular caller, but we'll let him slide in for this time while we're waiting for some other people who don't call in regularly. Go ahead, Sean. You're on the air.
Good morning, Paul. Thank you for welcoming me into your salon. Paul, I was really sympathizing with your comments. Recently, I re-listened to... Are you there, Paul?
Uh-huh. Sure.
Recently, Paul, I listened to an interview between James Kunstler and Derek Jensen, and they were both sounding a lot like you are this morning. Like, on the one hand, yes, I'm deeply sympathetic to the Green New Deal, but on the other hand, Jensen and Kunstler seem to be saying the whole notion of a bright green future, meaning, you know, wind and solar, and we can just keep growing the economy ad infinitum. It just seems absurd. We have to start shrinking the size of the economy. We have to start shrinking our consumption levels. And one thing an opinion that I hold that I don't think either one of those two hold, and it's, I know you don't hold, is that I don't see any kind of egalitarian way to shrink this economy, you know, to bring it into environmental sanity in a just fashion. I don't see any way to do that without some sort of authoritarian state. I mean, there's got to be some sort of a vanguard takeover of the state, and then there has to be a draconian measures taken to tell everyone, you can't drive anymore. You know, sorry, you can't drive your stupid car anymore. So I'll just leave it at that and get your response. Thanks.
Okay. Well, that's a challenge. That's a challenge. And, you know, some things don't necessarily have a response. Yeah, I mean, what you're basically saying is that there are no signs of the kind of larger scale solidarity and movement building that would be something like, you know, an anti-colonial war that, you know, totally overturned the power structure, and not always with such good results, because then you tend to get a new elite. But, you know, sometimes it's a relatively better. And unfortunately, a lot of the better anti-colonial leaders who had revolutions, say in Africa and elsewhere, ended up being undermined by the same old imperialists like the CIA or whoever anyway. But yeah, the kind of thing that would have to happen is unprecedented. So yeah, I certainly do despair, along with you, of the ability of us, whoever we might be, to amass the forces to drastically transform the system. I mean, I think the idea that we can do it through you know, legislative means, I am frankly rather skeptical, unless, you know, unless there is that kind of really, you know, ferment that is taking much bolder kinds of actions, like I've said on this show before, like when you actually do an anti-pipeline protest, you actually have the ability to have, you know, not just thousands, but tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people to actually prevent them from actually building the darn thing, and then to dismantle the ones that exist. We don't have that capacity because most people are still bought in to the idiot, you know, or just living in la-la land, that don't really see the urgency. And, or, you know, we're, as I said, we're just, you know, we're alienated, separated, disempowered. And it's, so the first step is to overcome those things. And that takes a lot of doing. So anyway, looks like we've got, no, we don't have anybody else, but 503-231-8187. That's the number to call in. 503-231-8187. Yeah. That's a big challenge. I don't know. I don't certainly, you know, the idea that an authoritarian would be able to, you know, I don't know what sort of. I guess I'll put the question out there. What sort of scenario do you see? I know that what's that great Slovenian or that interesting Slovenian philosopher Zizek? He has this thing where, you know, instead of like looking forward, like just continuing to do the same things to try to change things, you actually do this mental leap where you actually put yourself forward to the time when whatever, you know, revolution or whatever massive change you want to see has actually happened, and then walk it back mentally to see what it actually took to get there. So that sort of shakes you out of this idea that, you know, it's like just do whatever you can and somehow it will all magically sort of do the trick, as opposed to actually thinking, you know, in this sort of speculative, realistic way, what it actually would have taken to actually get there, to force yourself to confront in a much more real way the actual forces that are arrayed. But yeah, well, I could go on with that, but looks like we got Daniel ready to talk on the air. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, first time caller to this show, KBOO member. I would like to just kind of pull out some points, and, you know, I've had 3 cups of coffee, so just bear with me. I'll be short. Let me start from the last previous caller. You know, a Manhattan type project always can work. You know, small how do you say, a big kind of, you know, big project, as one would say, enclosed with some of the smartest, brightest people, and kind of putting it all together with the community.
It can, so, but that assumes that there's actually the power and the will to actually enact it. So you're kind of putting the cart before the horse. That's my criticism of a lot of these grand schemes, is they're, yeah, they would be great if they were actually able to be implemented, but you actually need the ability to implement it.
Well, let's agree on this. They have been implemented.
Well, like, give me an example.
Well, the Manhattan Project in itself. I mean, that is one spectrum of destruction.
Well, that was towards the direction of war. So that's a
correct.
You know, the
I wanted to throw the pendulum the other way. Like, think about it. If we put that much resources towards war, if we just thought of the Manhattan Project in reverse pendulum order, instead of the authoritarian government that the other gentleman suggested, which, you know, is just a suggestion of theory and thought, and I'm just throwing it out there. And I'd like to continue to the next point.
Okay.
And the first caller really had the fire starter to this whole show when she called in about, this is like Citizens United. This is huge. This is monumental. I can run over to Crater Lake right now and say it's a person and make sure it's going to be saved. I, as a kind of freestanding liberal independent here, Democratic kind of conscience, when, you know, I see my fellow Democrats kind of use the system, I would say run with this. Go organize as many community events as possible, and then you'll feel more empowered within your community to do the change. Don't look on the outside in, start within the inside out, as the second caller was maybe looking into, and as the first caller, totally knock out home run. We have a Citizens United here of monumental sources. Let's not be hippies and be complacent. Don't
wait a second. Why are you slandering hippies?
Well, I'll say this. I am a hippie and I love hippies, but the facts are this. I've been to enough hippie conventions to know that even hippies argue amongst themselves between one slice of pizza and two slices of pizza.
Okay.
And who's putting credit and who hasn't put in credit for the day's work.
I can sense the three cups of coffee here. You're really on a jag.
But you know what I'm getting at here. I don't want
to
be complacent. We are going against Ivy League, West Point kind of military strategists who have gerrymandered the whole entire nation here, and we just want to, like, win one chess piece on the board and be happy with it. And that's why Trump has literally rolled back everything that Obama has done, because he's, a blitzkrieg type of guy. I hate, you know, I'm three cups of coffee in, I'm a hippie, let's go save some world, you know, artifacts here, or some natures of wonder.
Okay, right on.
I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm not sure Obama really actually accomplished all that much, but let's see. Is this a different Laura, or is Laura back again? Hello?
I'm not Laura, but...
Okay, what's your name?
Karen.
Okay.
Yeah, I wanted to address the idea of having a revolution that's got a vanguard and tyrants, basically. That is obscene, frankly.
What is obscene and now?
A tyrannical vanguard.
Oh, okay.
Revolution being touted by a white boy. I'm tired of this stuff. When are you guys going to get it? Not you, Paul. But this is just stupid. Sorry, but it'll have all kinds of backfire. People will not unite. You'll just have another regime pounding on people's heads and killing people. I don't want to be part of that. Okay? We follow. We don't lead. If we're in the dominant group, the white Eurocentric people, we follow. We don't lead.
Who do we follow?
We follow Jacqueline Keeler's ideas. We follow the ideas of African Americans. It's the only way we'll ever get unity, is to defend the oppressed, is to defend and listen to the oppressed, is to follow their ideas. I am so tired of hearing this idea that we know the answers. No, we do not. We have some ideas. If we have to push those ideas at the point of a gun, they're not worth it. That's my view. I am absolutely overwhelmed that someone's bringing this up on so-called progressive radio, and that, Paul, you didn't push back. I love your show. I love you. I got to get off, because this absolutely pulls out all the stops for me. I'm an old radical. I've been down that road of watching people destroy themselves. That's what happens. Domination psychology kicks in. The men dominate everything. They're yelling and screaming, and they're running for their guns. This is craziness. I will not do this. And if we do this as leftists, it's a big, big, huge error, okay? We'll just be self-destructive. That's what always happens. I'm getting off the air because I can't handle this.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate your perspective and pushing back on Sean. And, I think I felt like he was expressing more a sense of despair, or the idea that we don't seem to actually have the capability of doing what is necessary to stop the, well, for one thing, to stop the climate juggernaut, which is so massively the inertial weight of it, with all the CO2 that's already out there, as they say, committed in the atmosphere, that basically what they say is we have to dismantle all the fossil fuel infrastructure, like, on a fairly rapid basis, and it just, so the Green New Deal is a beautiful idea, and I support it. I don't see any other ideas out there. I know there's the Extinction Rebellion people. I know there's the Sunrise Movement with the youth, who are there at Dianne Feinstein's. I was going to read a little of this article. I know there's the lawsuit with the youth here in the Northwest around the country, who are basically challenging to the federal government to come up with a real climate plan. There are some beautiful creative ideas. What we don't see is, again, the kind of mobilization that it seems like the Extinction Rebellion is calling for, which is people actually actually getting out there and trying to stop things, you know, in a direct way, which, you know, as an old time Earth Firster, it certainly had its effect when we even had really hundreds and you know, up to thousands, and not really necessarily tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands or perhaps the millions it would take. But you got to start somewhere. And I think I do see signs that we are sort of waking up. There are more and more people who are getting the climate urgency, but there's not the collective united action, because we're still so, as you know, some callers have said, still so separated. Anyway, looks like we got another caller. I did want to read a little bit of this article about Dianne Feinstein, if people had heard about that, where these youth, Dianne Feinstein clashed Friday with a group of children over climate change policy, criticizing their requests that she back the Green New Deal, accusing them of presenting an ultimatum and contrasting their inability to vote with her 3 decades in office. The exchange comes as moderate Democrats grapple with the Green New Deal, a 10-year plan to mitigate climate change championed by progressives such as Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York. In a video posted on Facebook by the Sunrise Movement, a youth climate change advocacy group, more than a dozen children and several adults from multiple advocacy organizations, including Sunrise Movement and Youth Versus Apocalypse, another youth climate change advocacy group based in the San Francisco Bay Area, meet with a senator to present her a letter they wrote and ask her to vote yes on the deal. The California Democrat argues that the policy is unworkable and says she doesn't agree with it. Quote, there's reasons why I can't, because there's no way to pay for it, she says, adding, I don't agree with what the resolution says. That's part of it. That resolution will not pass the Senate, and you can take that back to whoever sent you here, she says, citing that the deal doesn't have a single Republican in favor of the proposal. And, quote, the key to good legislation is to tailor something that you write so that it can pass and you can get a step ahead. When a girl urges her to vote yes anyway, Feinstein replies, I may do that, but it's not a good resolution. Anyway, in a statement Friday night about the confrontation, Feinstein said she, quote, always welcomes the opportunity to hear from Californians who feel passionately about this issue, and it remains a top priority. Anyway, it just goes to show this old kind of sort of institutional power, sort of thinking inside the box, you know, sort of playing the game sort of consciousness and way of doing politics is just not going to fly anymore. We need something very, very different. And these people gotta move out of the way, or we gotta shove them out of the way. You know, I'm not interested in doing it in a totalitarian way, but we certainly need to be a more forceful in general. And there's people who are doing that way more than I am in lots of different ways. But anyway, we've got Paul ready to talk on the air. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, Paul Cienfuegos, Paul.
Oh, what's going on?
I'm a new caller, and although I hear your show almost every week and love it. And corporatist Dianne Feinstein has to go. It's time for her to go. But I called in to answer the question about what's happening in Lake Erie that a previous caller brought up. Yes, yesterday the community rights movement successfully helped the voters of Toledo, Ohio, to pass a Lake Erie Community Rights of Nature Bill of Rights. I can read you a few paragraphs from the press release. It's
Shoot.
A very big deal. By a 61% yes vote yesterday, Toledo voters enacted the Lake Erie Bill of Rights Charter Amendment despite agricultural and industrial interests' well-funded campaigns opposing the ordinance. They actually tried to block it twice in court and failed. So Lake Erie now officially has the right to exist, flourish, and naturally evolve. The law recognizes the rights of the lake and its watershed and empowers citizens as part of that larger ecosystem and who have the right to a healthy environment, quote-unquote, to stand up for the lake when those rights are violated. It's the first of its kind U.S. law to acknowledge rights of an entire specific ecosystem. The language of the amendment, known as LEBOR, I'm not sure what that stands for, L-E-B-O-R, Lake Erie Bill of Rights, here we go, was drafted with assistance from Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, blah, blah, blah. And then it's kind of interesting because our movement has gotten so little success at getting the mainstream media or even the indie media to cover us, but this one somehow broke through. It was in Mother Jones, Le Monde, CNN, The New York Times, The Guardian, Vox, etc. Rights of Nature has finally broken through in the mainstream and indie media.
And so what practical, beyond, you know, the inevitable challenges, I assume there's going to be continued legal challenges to that, right? But, you can answer that.
I can only assume so, yeah. And I don't know exactly how one city that sits on Lake Erie is going to be able to claim rights. So that's going to be a really interesting legal battle. Obviously, there's many cities that sit along the lake.
So are you saying that the extent of it might be, if it passes muster, you know, through whatever challenges, that they'll be able to challenge Toledo, you know, things, actions that originate in Toledo? It would seem, how would it be able to go beyond that?
No, actually, the community rights movement makes claims that anything that impacts the people.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so for example, years ago, the city of Pittsburgh City Council passed an ordinance that if the public's right against toxic trespass has been violated by fracking upriver of Pittsburgh, then the city of Pittsburgh has the authority to sue those individuals or corporations or government agencies that violate the people's right against toxic trespass in Pittsburgh.
And
so it's
just
the same.
Just to follow that, because I know we got another caller, but so do you know what has happened in Pittsburgh? Has there been consequences from that?
You know, I don't know. Okay. I don't know whether the Pittsburgh City Council has ever used their authority, uh-huh. and I don't know whether there's been pushback. But I do know that Pittsburgh is one of the few communities that's passed two of our ordinances, and the first one was a fracking ban, and that one stands with no lawsuits 6 or 8 years later.
Mm-hmm.
After many dozens of fracking proposals were coming into Pittsburgh when they stopped it. And just for listeners, if you want to know more about this movement, communityrights.us, www.communityrights.us.
And then there's the Community Rights
organization.
And then there's CELDEF, also the...
And then there's CELDEF, Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. Yep.
Okay. And those are two sources. And, of course, your group operates locally as well, Community Rights PDX.
Community Rights PDX isn't active anymore.
Oh, no, okay.
For years. But Community Rights US, communityrights.us, is now the second national support organization for the movement. And if you go to our homepage, you'll find the most comprehensive news and analysis updated almost every day about the work in the community rights movement going on around the country.
Okay. Well, thank you. With that,
thanks a lot for your show. Bye.
Thanks for responding to the query about what that Lake Erie Toledo resolution ordinance was actually all about. We appreciate that. It's always nice when you can get feedback right. But it looks like Sarah's been waiting ever so patiently. I hope you're still there, Sarah. Oh, you're not. Please call back. I'm sorry we took so long. 503-231-8187. This has been nice because we've been asking for people who haven't called in and they've responded. So we've got about 15 minutes left. So please call in. I was going to read, there's actually, if you go to Wikipedia and look up this entry on progress, it's actually really quite interesting. I really got to hand it to Wikipedia and all the wikis. Because there's a lot of thought, and it's all public domain, and it's all done, basically, I think, on a volunteer basis. And of course, they're always looking for contributions. I think I actually finally kicked down not too long ago, just because, it's just there. You can look up so much information. Okay, looks like we've got Harvey, who might be a long-time caller, but we'll let you slide in today. Go ahead, Harvey.
Hi, Paul. Well, I have a novel patriotic idea that would help, that I believe would help. And, people are what I call symbol-centric. We really relate to symbols, political symbols, religious symbols, corporate symbols. And so I read this article, and the headline was, "Scientists Develop a Flag That Can Produce Energy from the Wind and the Sun." And basically, the way the wind makes a flag fly back and forth, it turns out that piezoelectric, that's spelled P-I-E-Z-O-E-L-E-C-T-R-I-C, piezoelectric, that term means pressure to electricity, and photovoltaic means light, photovoltaic, light to electricity. Well, they made an American flag with flexible piezoelectric strips and flexible photovoltaic strips. And so I thought of the American flag where, it's the stars and the stripes. So the stars could be on the flag, could be photovoltaic, flexible photovoltaic material, and the stripes could be piezoelectric strips. And so therefore, it would be known as the green star, the star and stripes. And it's the perfect vehicle for generating electricity. And the stars are the stars and stripes would be basically the new symbol of a renewable energy renaissance in America.
And well, there so you go. Maybe the Cascadians ought to get on a Cascadian flag version of that and get ahead of the curve.
Yes, it would be basically, and with millions and millions of American flags everywhere, all over America and the world, when this piezoelectric photovoltaic stars and stripes flies in the wind, everyone from kids to parents will see this new symbol of renewable energy. And even if if the Star Spangled Banner says, "Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light? So proudly we hail at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad..."
We know what it says, yeah.
"And stars, and it was basically, we have a song about the stars and stripes, so
okay,
the kids could put their hand over their arm, and the American flag, we can say, wave on.
It's very stirring. You're really getting my patriotic energies going here.
The new green energy flag.
All right, you're always innovative, Harvey. We appreciate your vision and your passion, and... But we've got someone who might be a first-time caller. Thank you for calling in, Harvey. We've got Liz. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I listen to your show intermittently. I'm a teacher,
and I'm thankfully snowed in today. So I just am so appreciating having an alternative to listen to this morning while I do some lovely baking than the OPB. I'm also happy that no one has been talking about the whole Cohen thing that's happening coexisting with you right now online on air.
Oh yeah, no. He's got enough attention, but I'm sure it's interesting.
I'm appreciating just a word of thanks to some hope in this just dire thing that's going on. And why, I guess, this whole congressional grilling of this guy Cohen, and what is the point? I mean, doesn't it need to be a criminal trial instead of just a congressional grilling? I mean, what do you see as the point of all of this?
Well, I thought you were saying you were appreciating that we weren't talking about Cohen. Now you're asking me to talk about Cohen. I'm just being coy here.
Yeah.
I think the point is because the Democrats have the House and not the Senate, and they've been battered by this whole Trumpist agenda. And I think they're showing their own power, and you know that they can actually have, you know, they're showing that. I think they're trying to get stuff on the public record. I don't know. Maybe they've got their own partisan interests, but I think that's what it is. I think they're showing that they're able to, you know, to push back, I think is mainly what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much again. Appreciate what you're doing here.
All right. And thank you for calling in. All right. 503-231-8187. Still got 10 minutes. So yeah, this, you know, I would start out by talking about progress, and I've got a couple articles. John Gray is Human Progress and Illusion. I'll put these up. I didn't prepare a program page for today because I hadn't really done that much advanced preparation. I didn't have a guest, but I'll put some of this stuff on there. Progress is the idea that advances in technology, science, and social organization can produce an improvement in the human condition, and therefore the entire societies and humanity in general can improve in terms of their social, political, and economic structures. This may happen as a result of direct human action, as in social enterprise, or through activism, as a natural part of social-cultural evolution. Goes back to my original song, Evolution, by Tully Cooper. But anyway, the concept of progress was introduced in the early 19th century social theories, especially social evolution, as described by Auguste Comte and Herbert Spencer. It was present in the Enlightenment's philosophies of history. As a goal, social progress has been advocated by varying realms of political ideologies with different theories on how it is to be achieved. Then they talk about measuring progress. They talk about scientific progress. Social progress, within which is status of women, modernization, and they go to individual thinkers, they go back to antiquity, the Enlightenment, Marxist theory, all very interesting. But it goes back to my original point, which what is the starting point? Because if you start with, you know, the arrival of Euro-Americans here in the Pacific Northwest, there has been no progress. It's been regression. Horrible regression and horrible, you know, devastation to both humans, the human existing societies, and they've had to do everything they can just to survive and to maintain what they've been able to maintain. Certainly the animal populations, the ecosystems have suffered greatly. So no, there's no progress. Is there possible like betterment of our situation compared to what there is now? Well, of course. I think a lot of it has to do with actually recognizing a different baseline of human society and looking to, as Jacqueline Keeler often points out, a different way of relating both to each other, ourselves, and the land, and the other beings that exist here, which I guess the rights of nature approach underlines. And then what we've got, because what we've got has, there's really, it's got no internal points of reference to really save it. I think the only thing that can save it is both a recognition of its own horrible internal flaws and history of destruction and oppression, and looking perhaps elsewhere outside of itself. Anyway, those are some of my thoughts. Again, this is from this Wikipedia entry on progress. And yeah, you know, the whole idea that technology can save us, I'm highly skeptical of the idea of, you know, green technology. There's a lot of evidence that actually the amount of production that has to go into the green technologies, you know, certainly in the short term, actually can increase if we don't actually reduce the amount of production in general that we're doing. The idea that we can maintain, as Sean rightly pointed out, that we can maintain the kinds of the lifestyles that we live, the amount of production of energy materials, we have to turn back the clock on the kinds of accelerations in material production that has characterized the 19th and 20th centuries. It's madness. It's an illusion. The internet was seen as a possible savior. All it does is produce way more electricity. All these devices that are used for, you know, a year or 6 months or 2 years and then thrown out and have to be thrown into the landfill with all the toxics in them. It's madness. It's an illusion. It takes us nowhere. So I have no solutions. I'm very skeptical of our ability to do it. But I think we have to start by recognizing looks like Victoria's. I've been looking down and talking my monologue, but looks like Victoria is now with us to share her thoughts. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Okay, I'm a first time caller. I think that nature is beautiful, and that people have lost their connection with each other and with nature. And I'm with you as far as the indigenous cultures that were here before white men arrived.
And are still here.
On the continent of the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
So my feeling is everybody needs to do the best they can and connect with each other and see each other and see the biosphere and see that the current paradigm, the current system, the globalization of resources and exchanges of fiat money and foreign exchange and the whole system is, you know, going to be crumbling down, and there'll be people who are fear-based in their reactions, and then there'll be the people who are love-based in their reactions. This has been the struggle all along, and I'm hoping for the love-based folks to survive and to do the things that are needed to change the paradigm, and that is my view. And I live appropriately, very low carbon footprint, and try my best to connect with people and exchange that view.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. I guess that's all she wanted to say. Well, it looks like Joe's on the line, who's got like one minute and a half. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi. It took me a long time to try and realize that I needed to call in for the first time. And my take is that people need to, like Joe Ure said one time a long time ago, he uses a push mower. And that's always been my philosophy, and my parents even kind of forced it upon me back when I was 12, and they wanted me to mow this one lady's lawn, and I've never gone to a power mower, and I've never seen the practicality of it, and I see people yanking their shoulders out of place trying to get a power mower started, and then when it finally does, then they're probably, you know, pissed, and they don't want to do it anyway, but they have to, and then there's people that mow their lawn continuously through the year that, you know, like they're mowing mud or something.
And you think that's going to slow down climate change?
Oh, a push mower is so much more efficient for and it's great for the environment and the economy too. I mean, you never have to put money out for oil or gas or any of that stuff.
That's actually bad for the economy, because the economy we live in actually runs on people using more and more, especially
right.
fossil fuel based things.
Unfortunately, that's the case.
Right.
But I love it. I mean, I want to throw that out there, and I hope Joe Uris and everybody else, all the folks that can expound about the benefits of a push mower and cycling and things like that without any fuel based economy usage. But,
all right. Well, I appreciate that. And my view is that it's actually going to take a lot more. It's probably going to take a certain amount of deconstruction, if not destruction, of the existing order that we live in. But, you know, I'm into revolution. Anyway, that's about all I have to say for today. As I said, I'm going to put some of those thoughts, some of those sources that I had on my program page, and maybe some others. We're Doomed, Now What? By Roy Scranton. I've been reading that, too. It's pretty cool. But hey, I got to get out of here and leave room for Lisa Loving and friends. So thank you so much for listening. This is Paul Rowland with Wednesday Talk Radio. Talk at you next week.
Talk about destruction. Don't you know you can count me?
KBOO Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films, happening Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. Most films will show at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, room 104 at PCC Cascade Campus. 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.